somewhere on 7:50, 8 o'clock, but this way we'll also get some of Ksuvos in as well. It also affords an opportunity for some others to join who I know wanted to be here, but we're having difficulty with the 7:30. So this way they'll be able to make it as well. So we start out with Ksuvos, and I wanted to note that the Siyum today, and therefore the Shir also, is dedicated by Alan Steinfeld in honor of his grandson's Hanachas Tefillin today. First grandson. Okay. So I wanted to first note something from last time. Just because the comment had been made and I didn't give the source at the time for it, I put it on the source sheet, so people should be able to have it there. For those who have the source sheet, for those who don't, I'm not going to share it for this, but I'll share it for some other things later. The comment was made last time that the 200 zuz that are the ksuba are meant to be a year's support. So I noted at the time that it's not really that it's a year's support in the sense that we don't adjust it when in order to match a year's support. Nonetheless, there is a source for the broad idea that the 200 zuz that are the ksuba should be a year's support based on a mission in Peah, in the 8th chapter in Peah. What they're talking about there is the issue of matnos aniyim, the gifts that we give to the needy in general, and the question of how I define needy. How exactly do you do that? I remember when I was in Israel, one of the years I was learning there was a meiser ani year, a year when you take 10% of your produce and you give it to the needy. So who qualifies? How exactly do you do that? So there's a poverty line. And the mission in Peah says, Misha Yeshla Masayim Zuz Lo Yito Leket Shecho Peo Meiser Ani. If someone has 200 Zuz to his name, he should not claim Leket Shecha and Peah. Leket and Shecha we know as the gleanings, that which was dropped when the harvesters were harvesting, or that which they missed, as well as Peah, the corner of the field, and Meiser Ani, that 10%, should not be collected if somebody has 200 Zuz. And Rav Avadya Mibartanura, he's not the only one, but he's the one I cut and pasted, writes on that Mishnah, why 200 zuz? Kim luhul rabbanon she'elu maspikim l'shana achas l'chsus v'lemezonos. He says the rabbanon understood that 200 zuz is sufficient for a year's worth of clothing and food. I don't remember if he's getting that from a Yerushalmi or if that's something a separate source. But in any case, there they're telling you 200 zuz is the amount for support for the year, and so the 200 zuz, that is the ksuba, is also the amount of support for the year. I'm not 100% sure that this is actually true. To make the analogy to the ksuba. And the reason why I hesitate is a point that Rav Schechter made in a shir of his that I heard on ksuvos. I mentioned last time that there's some debate as to whether the ksuba is d'oraisa, is biblical, or is d'rabbanan, whether it's rabbinic. And I noted that there's one source that people bring to say that it is biblical, and that is the language of our standard ksuba. Our ksuba, used by Ashkenazim, says that she is going to receive 200 zuz, which she deserves, mi d'oraisa, biblically. Well, that would seem to make it an open and shut case. Obviously, it's obviously the ksuba is biblical. However, those who argue that the ksuba is rabbinic say that's not the meaning of that line. Rather, it means the coins are biblical zuzin, because we have different standards for our currencies in terms of how much silver they need to have. There are biblical currencies and there are rabbinic currencies. And I'm not going into all that now. That's a headache we can get to later in the Masechta. But the point is that they read this line in the ksuba to say that the zuzin that are used for the ksuba, the 200 zuz for the ksuba, are biblical zuzin. That's what it's saying when it says d'oraisa. That the standard, the type of currency you use, is the more expensive biblical level standard. And my point is that the 200 zuz, that's the poverty line standard, may not be the biblical zuz. That may be the rabbinic zuz. In which case, the two are not the same at all. So that's just something worth noting. But overall, the core point out of this is still that's the source, I think, for people saying that the ksuba is meant to be a year's worth of support. That's number one. Number two, I gave you a sheet which we're not going to go through now, but I sent it out in the email that I sent out when I said that the sheet for the Shir in general. It's the Meiri's introduction to the Masechta. We've seen this before. I've taken you through the Meiri before to show you how the Meiri gives how the Meiri gives an introduction to each Masechta of the Gemara and even each chapter of the Gemara. So I'm just actually calling it up on my screen so I can share it with you and just run through it with you now. So hang on one moment, please. I'm going to share the screen. Okay, there you go. So, the introduction to Maseches Ksuvos of the Meiri. Right, everyone is able to see that? It's coming through?
It's locked up.
Sorry?
It's locked up. What's actually... we're good.
Oh, good. As long as Eldon's here. So... So the top line in it, he just says, this is Maseches Ksuvos, it is from Seder Nashim, it is normally learned, he says, after Maseches Kiddushin, for a reason which, he says, go back to the beginning of my writing and you'll see it there. He lists you the 13 chapters in the second paragraph there, and then he tells you all the issues that the Masechta discusses. So issues of marriage, issues of litigation and claims about property that relate to marriage, issues of rights that are during the marriage, as well as after she passes away or after he passes away, and so on and so on and so on. So he gives you a dot, 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 list, and then he says, based on that, here are 12 bullet-pointed items, which are the topics covered in the Masechta in order, starting with Harishon here and going all the way down, and then he tells you which ones are in which chapter. So the first issue is really what the first chapter is about. Second is the second. They match up very nicely, which they don't always do in a Masechta. Until he tells you the seventh and eighth topics are going to be in chapter 7, and so on. You can see that here. So it's a nice thing. I thought about translating it for everybody. Then I realized how long it was and saw that I had other shiurim I also had to prepare and said, you know what, I'm not going to translate it for everybody. I apologize. But it's there for those who want a chance to get an overview via the Meiri. We did our own overview last week. Okay, so let's come back to the Masechta and where we left off. So we had said in the Mishnah that a Basula is going to get married on Wednesday. We noted from Tosfos it means not Wednesday night, but Wednesday during the day. And the goal of that is that in the event that the husband does not find Basulim, it turns out that she was not a Basula at the time of the marriage, he will be able to go to Beis Din in the morning, and he won't have an opportunity to call off and say, you know what, I'm okay with it. We don't want him to be okay with it, because in the event that whatever happened with her happened before the Erusin, before the Kiddushin, so, okay, that's not great, we're not thrilled, it changes the Ksuba amount, but there's nothing further to do, there's no liability issue. However, in the event that whatever happened with her happened after the Kiddushin, and if she was a willing participant, that disqualifies the whole marriage. Not disqualifies, the marriage is valid. However, now they have to divorce, and if there are witnesses, there are all sorts of repercussions, potentially, to this act that took place. So what we need is for him to go to Beis Din in order for people to hear about the case and come forward if they are witnesses. We want to make sure that that is going to happen. So, since the Beis Din convened on Mondays and Thursdays, therefore, do the wedding on Wednesday. Don't do the wedding Wednesday night, we said, because in the fight that they're going to have over the financial details of the Ksuba, it could take all night long, and then you have defeated the whole purpose, so we're not going to allow you to do that. But what we said instead was that the wedding should be during the day on Wednesday. So Eldon asked a really good question. why not get married instead on Sunday? Since the Beis Din meets on Monday and Thursday, so get married instead on Sunday. Why are you getting married on Wednesday? Why specifically on Wednesday? So that brings us to the discussion here. For those just tuning in, so you missed a little bit of back issues about the 200 Zuz and the Meiri, but you can always catch up on the recording. I expect to send out a link to the collection of Ksubos recordings once YU Torah turns it into a collection, so there's one link to catch all of the recordings. I'll explain that in an email at some point. But that's but that brings us to our Gemara. So if you take a look in the Gemara, what you want is the fourth line on the page, the big Gimel Mem, and I will share the screen so that you'll be able to see it there for those who have not yet picked up Ksubos for themselves. So, at the big Gimel Mem. Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yosef quotes Rav Yehuda quoting Shmuel. Mipnei ma amru bat besula niseis liyom haravi. Why did they say she should get married on Wednesday? Lefisha shaninu, because we've already learned. Higia zman velo nisu, ochlos mishalo v'ochlos betruma. This is a completely different point. It does not relate to what we've said so far. It's going to be here and gone, but it's going to become important soon enough in the Masechta, so therefore we need to know it. And here's the story. We've said that going back to the days of the Gemara, you had as much as a year between the Kiddushin and the Nisuin. So the way it worked was, you did the Kiddushin, the Erusin, he gave her the ring, and at that point they are halachically married to a certain extent, but not permitted to each other. And then, after this period of time, they have a Nisuin with a chuppah, and at that point they're able to proceed as a fully married couple. What we learn now is that they would actually say, after a year from the Kiddushin, in the event that they didn't get married, he owes her support, as though they were already married. That's the rule. So that's what this line is about. Higia zman velo nisu. If the time arrives, a year has elapsed, and they're not married, ochlos mishelo. The women can eat out of his property. In other words, the husband is responsible to support her. V'ochlos betruma. And not only that, but if he's a Kohen, she is already able to eat truma, because she's married. They had Kiddushin. So therefore, she is already able to eat truma. We wouldn't have her eat truma earlier. There are concerns about having her eat truma earlier if she gives it to her family, other issues. But from now on, she's able to eat truma. So the Gemara asks, and there's the key. Yachol higia zman be'echad b'shabas yeimala la'mizonos. I might think that if the time for the marriage, the year elapses on a Sunday, he should have to feed her, because they're not married yet. Lekach shaninu b'sula niseis liyom haravi. Therefore we say, no, she's getting married on Wednesday. In other words, I'm going to stop sharing the screen so that I can explain this a little bit better. It's easier when I can see people. What we're saying is this. Normally, the year elapses, time's up, you have to support her whether you got married or not. However, the novelty that we're introducing here is, our Mishnah says no, the marriage takes place only on Wednesday. And therefore, if Sunday the year is up and they're not married, that's not his fault. The rule is, get married on Wednesday. So our Mishnah went out of the way to say, get married on Wednesday, in order to teach he's not responsible until then, because it's not his fault. Is that clear? I've got a yes and I've got a no. I've got a bunch of yeses, but I still have a no, so let me see if I can explain this a little bit differently. Harry, gives me...
I just don't understand the rationale. Why would he not be allowed to support obligated after the year to do it? It's not her fault either.
Correct.
It's not her father's fault either.
Right. So we have a basic principle of Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya. You want to get something out of somebody, you have to prove that you have a right to it. And in this case, you're asking him to pay. You have to prove that he has some kind of responsibility to pay. That's the idea. He can say, it's not my fault. I want to get married. It's the rabbis who are stopping me. Don't blame me and make me pay. Keep on having her be supported by her father. The father, you're right, is going to complain and say, well, it's not my fault either. But she's got to eat. So it's going to stay with the one who's been supporting her children.
For his obligation to she has prohibitions against her because of the legal relationship they entered.
Yeah.
Why should he take all the responsibilities even if they're not married yet?
Why should who take them on?
Even though they haven't gone through any sort yet.
Why should who take on the responsibilities?
Husband.
He doesn't.
The passage of time, regardless of marriage, visited responsibilities upon him, even if they didn't get married.
Correct.
So why shouldn't the extra responsibility crystallize at the end of the year, even if they haven't done any sort?
Right.
Why is the logic?
Because why is it, let's go back to the first point, why is it that after a year he has to support her? Where's that magic coming from?
I assume it's a Darabanan.
So it's not even a Darabanan. It's simply contract law. In other words, you know when you do Kiddushin that there's a clock that starts, and you've got a year.
It's to incentivize him to get going already. Get on with it.
I mean, it's not like he hasn't had a year. But the idea here is that that he agreed to the one-year timeline in the beginning. He didn't agree to something less. He agreed to the year. So therefore, he's responsible by year's end. But in the event that he didn't act on it, that's his problem. That's not her problem. I'm sorry, I'm saying the other way. In the event that he didn't act on it for his own reasons, it's his problem. But if something else kept him from doing it, and we're going to see other cases further on the Amud, what if she's sick? What if she's in Ida? We're going to talk about other possibilities. But in the event that the reason they don't get married is because they show up at the wedding venue, and the rabbi says, I'm sorry, I can't help you. It's not Wednesday. We only do marriages on Wednesdays. Then he turns around and says, that's not my problem.
I must be thick, because I don't get it. He could have gotten married the week before. He could have gotten married 2 weeks before. He could have gotten married 3 weeks before. He didn't have to wait till the final end of the year. And I know from, in Ontario law, for example, if someone bequeaths a piece of real estate to Laser Rand, and the executor doesn't get around to transferring it, for 3 years. Even though that didn't happen, the land is owned by Laser Rand because the 3-year statutory time limit is up.
So let me give you a different legal analogy here. And I know tax law is not your field, but in the event that April 30th, right, for the Americans, think April 15th. If April 30th turns out to be a Saturday, when do personal income taxes have to be filed?
Probably not the first. Second.
Right. Why doesn't the government say, but you could have filed them the week before? That's not the way deadlines work. Yes, Eldon. You're an accountant.
I just thought, given, and this is going to be a weird question, but they thought this 2,000 years old or something, but here we are in COVID, and if we still have the system of assuming months before Kiddushin, and all of a sudden there was social distancing because of some pandemic.
Yes. So that's a really good question. We're going to get to that. Originally, I thought we might even get to that today, but it ain't happening. But we are going to get to that question further down the Amud. So what we're saying here is this. The Gemara says something which, if you think about it carefully, you realize it's circular. We didn't actually answer the question, and the Gemara is going to call us on it. But the Gemara asks, why is it that he's getting married on Wednesday night? And the answer that the Gemara gives, on Wednesday during the day, and the Gemara's answer is, our Mishnah needed to say you get married during the on Wednesday, so that we'll understand that if the year ends on Sunday, he's not responsible. But you never answered the question. So why is it that it has to be Wednesday? All you told me is why the Mishnah said it had to be Wednesday. But he didn't explain why it has to be Wednesday. We know, because the Mishnah already told us. We read it last week. But the Gemara is not giving me the real answer here. So if you take a look back in the Gemara, I know we have to get to the Siyum soon, but I want to make sure to at least complete this point. The Gemara said, why did they say that the Basula gets married on Yom Ravi on Wednesday? Lefisha Shaninu, because we learned, Higiyas man velo nisu, ochlos mishalov, ochlos betruma, if the year is up, then she gets to eat from his property and even eats truma if he's a kohen. Yochol higiyas man be'echad b'shabbos, I might have thought if the time comes on Sunday, Ye malalam mizonos, he should have to feed her. Lakach shaninu besula nisayis liyom arvi. That's why we said she gets married on Wednesday. So Amar Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says, what are you talking about? Mare d'Avram, God of Abraham. That's a good exclamation. That's like an old-fashioned exclamation there. Lord of Abraham. Tali tanya bidalo tanya. So his first way that he phrases his objection is, you are making that which we have learned depending on that which we have not learned. Meaning, the Mishnah said, get married on Wednesday, and you're saying it's based on this other foreign idea about having to support her after a year. To which the Gemara says, no, that's not what you mean. Hi Tanya, hi Lo Tanya. Which one is it one is learned and one is not learned? Ha Tanya, ha Tanya. Both of those are legitimate sources. The source that says that you get married on Wednesday is a legit source. The source that says you have to pay support after a year is a legitimate source. So that's not really his objection. Don't ignore the last couple of lines. This is his objection. Ella Tali Tanya de Mefarish Taima. Biditanya de lo mefarish taima. That's not his point. His objection that he's giving here, I'm just scrolling a little bit. The objection that he's giving is, in our Mishnah, it told us why the wedding is Wednesday. You're making it in order to teach me about support, which didn't have any reasons attached to it. Our Mishnah said, why Wednesday? You already know why Wednesday. Ella, rather, I itmar hachi itmar. If this was taught at all, this is the way it was taught. If you see where the arrow is on the screen? Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said, quoting Shmuel, Mipnei ma amru besula nises liyom haravi. Why did they say that her marriage should be on a Wednesday? Shem hayalo tainas besula mayamashkim lebezdin. So that if he has a claim, he says there was no blood, then they go to the Beis Din in the morning. And now the Gemara finally asks Eldon's question from last week. Vitinase be'echad b'Shabbos, so why not get married on Sunday? Shem hayalo tainas besulim, so that if he has a claim, wait, she's not a besula, hayamashkim le'Beis Din, he could get up to Beis Din in the morning. So the Beis Din meets on Monday. So the Gemara gives an answer which we're going to hold off. We're going to read it, but we're going to explain it next week, God willing. Shakdu chachamim al takanas benos Yisrael. Shakdu, right? If you think of the Haftorah of Divrei Yirmiyahu, shokade ani. To be shokade, to be a shakdan, is to be diligent. Shakdu chachamim, the sages were diligent about improving things for benos Yisrael, for Jewish girls. That this guy's going to have to work to prepare the meal for 3 days. Echad b'Shabbos, Sheni b'Shabbos, Ushlishi b'Shabbos. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, you prepare the meal. Urvi konsa, and then on Wednesday you marry her. That's the idea. Whereas, if you hold the wedding on Sunday, he can't do 3 days of preparation. Any preparation he does before Shabbos is going to go to waste. They didn't have refrigeration. So therefore, because you didn't have that option, they said, we're only accepting weddings on Wednesday. We want to make sure she really has a nice wedding day. So we're waiting until Wednesday. Your only wedding options, effectively, are Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because those are the only ones that would allow for a 3-day preparation period. And we knock out Thursday and Friday, because they don't allow you to go to Beis Din. So what's left is Wednesday. Now, we have questions. I have questions. one question I have is, why is this about her? What do you mean, her wedding meal? It's his wedding meal also. Right? That's question number one. What other questions would you ask about this?
If he's taking her 3 days to prepare the food, does she still eat from that food during those 3 days?
No, you can't eat from the wedding food beforehand. No way.
But it says that from the... So, in other words, if Sunday had been the 12th, the end of the 1 year,
Clive, you get into that room when the caterer says you get into that room. Until then, Flo says the door is locked. You're not getting in. There's no option of getting into that room. But I have another question. Why do you need 3 days to prepare one meal? What kind of a wedding is this? It seemed 3 days. What is it? Yeah, I mean, what is he doing? So we have to talk about what this preparation is and why it's linked to her and not to him. So God willing, we're going to do that next week. And we're going to instead pause here so that we can do the Siyum for Maseches Avodah Zarah. Now, Brian, you're our MC for the Siyum?
I am, I guess.
Please, take it away.
Can you allow me to share the screen?
Yes. Hold on 1 second. Okay.
All right. Okay. Share screen. There we go. All right. There we go. Can everybody see that?
Oh, fancy.
Don't be too impressed.
Which one of you kids did this, Brian?
All right. I feel like I'm going to record this one now.
Actually, you should record it because there might be some people who might want to see it. I mean, it's fun. So,
okay.
I'm memory lane. Beautiful, Rabbi Trachiner. Thank you, Rabbi Trachiner. I actually made it. I'm here, so I'm glad to be able to have the scoop to start the process of our Zoom this evening. I have a number of different kibbutim and things I would like to touch upon, so why don't we get to it right now. So the first thing I wanted to say is this siyum this evening, on a second of Avodah Zarah, is in honor of H.I. Ariel Steinfeld, who put on tefillin for the first time this morning. I'll talk to the Steinfelds on Ariel's bar mitzvah. There was another picture, Alan, Ariel actually with his tefillin from this morning. Great picture. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to insert it into the PowerPoint, but
that's
I like this picture, actually.
It's a good picture. It's a great picture. Lake Ontario.